Jesus has this line. He says, the Spirit blows wherever it pleases. You can't tell where it comes from and where it's going. Like, when I can feel that happening in my own life, I think I've done as good enough of a job to get out of the way of the mysterious wind of the divine.
Welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans, to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. Hope Still Wins is a place where we get to know thought leaders from diverse backgrounds and differing worldviews to help us feel less alone, more connected, and move us to become a better world together. Each week, I'll be interviewing inspiring and relatable guests in attempts to get to know their hearts, celebrate their stories, and explore the concept of hope to hear how and if it has played a role in their lives, ultimately answering the question, does hope still win? If so, why? And if not, why not? And in today's episode, I'm really glad you're here because I get to sit down with my new friend, Kent Dobson. Kent is a spiritual leader. He is somebody that is guided and directed and is a deep thinker. He's a thought leader. In a lot of ways, he spends a lot of time contemplating and meditating and making sure that he is on the right path. And when he's not, he's also very, very willing to share that. And he was actually one of the leaders, the main leader, in my recent trip with Jessica and my parents to Israel. This was an incredible trip. Kent is full of knowledge. I can't even explain in words how much knowledge he has and he shared with us. In fact, the study Bible I'm reading right now was written by Kent Dobson. Kent is a really incredible human to talk to. And it was really important for me to get him on this podcast because I want to share him with all of you. And maybe you're familiar with him. Maybe you're not. But if you're not, I promise you, this conversation will leave you with a few nuggets to take away and to process and to meditate on and to contemplate on. And I believe it's going to be helpful for us all. So let's dig into it, shall we? On this episode of Hope Still Wins, here's my conversation with Kent Dobson. Kent, thanks for joining Hope Still Wins.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You know, I've been listening to your podcast since we got back from Israel, and it's been awesome.
Yeah, you like it?
I do. Hey, just to let everybody know, Kent and Michael, and a lot of Kent, led my family around Israel just a few weeks ago. Very thankful. I've tried to figure out how to explain to people like who they should have as a guide on those types of trips, but I'm very thankful that you two were our guides.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, thanks. I've worked hard, I think, to, I don't know, try to create the right kind of container. And yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yeah, appreciate it.
What does that mean? Because there was a uniqueness to it. What does that mean?
Well, first of all, Israel trips they tend to have two colors. One is political and the other is kind of religious or biblical. And sometimes there's like a combination of those two, but they're very polarizing. It's like there are trips for pro-Palestinian things, trips for pro-Israel. And on the religious side, it's like, well, pick your flavor, like Catholic trip, Protestant trip, Baptist trip. And they're very pre-programmed. And of course I lived in Israel for 3 years, so I have a different perspective anyway, but you know, I want the land, the experience, the stories, the history to change me as a leader, as a guide, and also the participants, you know, to be affected in a certain way. And the only way to do that is to leave it somewhat open-ended, like, where are you on this thing? And what is the nature of your own life or your own spiritual life or what you think about when it comes to God or religion or faith or the Bible? And let's try to have a kind of ongoing conversation about that, a living conversation, and see what happens. So,
you know, I'm not going to put these. And so I hope you can help me out as a friend and fill in where maybe my questions miss. But Israel was, it's funny, Jess and I were at dinner last night and we were talking about our very first episode where we kind of broke down our trip. And she's like, I wish we could do it again now. And I said, why do you say that? She goes, because there's been so much more that's came out in me since we recorded that. And I said, what do you mean? She's like, I feel like every day I think about that trip, which doesn't, you know, that's something we'll talk about in a second, why a trip to Israel might be thought about day over day over day instead of just like going on it and leaving it behind. That I would want to discuss. And so I want to start this conversation because so many people were interested in our trip to Israel. With what you just said, you take it very serious. You want to make sure that you leave it open-ended. But yet at the same time, you're just saying there's so many different ways to do a trip to Israel. Mm-hmm. It can be pro this or pro that, or it can be a Catholic trip or a Protestant trip. Or even as an Islamic trip, like you, there's mm-hmm. so many different ways.
Or
you
Jewish
could
do, trip.
Or yeah. a Jewish trip. You could. There's so mm-hmm. many. So within that, I think my question is, how are you making sure you do the trip right? And when I say right, maybe truthful to what the area is and what it's done.
Well, I don't know if I have the corner on the truth of the place. Israel had such a profound effect on me. When I was living there, I went to graduate school there, but I wasn't just stuck in the library. I was living there. I moved there with my wife. We had kids, you know, we were trying to figure out how to pay bills. And we didn't realize after like several months of schlepping schlepping our groceries from the grocery store to home in the stroller that you could just pay like 20 shekels and have them delivered, you know, that kind of stuff. And so that's like, it affected us and it completely sort of rearranged my own map when it comes to God and faith and Christianity and Judaism and things like that. And so my desire to want to lead trips is that the experience of being there will rearrange someone's map. And all I have to do is allow that to happen and be a little less agenda driven. So when I say Catholic trip, Protestant trip, that's very agenda driven. It's like the one text we use here, we repeat this line, you know, you hire this kind of guide and they tell you this thing and everyone's like, oh yeah, that's why we came here. You just don't do it. You know, you enter into a conversation and you allow a little of the complexity of the place to do its own work on you. And I still feel like, even though I live there and have been there a bunch and, you know, I still feel like a guest and you can see, you know, what, like one of the unique things is on your trip is that we had a Jewish Israeli bus driver and an Arab Catholic Palestinian Christian guide and me. And we had Michael, who you mentioned, who's a pastor in Denver. And so it's just like, co-sharing of there, a co-leading of things that's unfolding. And you're just not allowed to have the single narrative. You want multiple narratives to emerge. And so I guess I'm trying to just create a container for that to happen. So something like that. Does that resonate with you? Does that make sense? Is that what you experienced?
It is what I experienced. Yeah. And I experienced later in the trip than at the beginning. I think, you know, I don't know if you remember this day, but we were on the Mount of the Beatitudes or in that area. And my mom was breaking down. And I just asked her, I said, what's going on? And she goes, you know, all of my thoughts and all the preparation and all of my feelings are just thought that I would get here and there would be this place or this moment where I would just be in awe. And I felt like, oh, now it all makes sense. Mm. And she goes, it's been the opposite. Mm. Not that it's bad, not that it brings more chaos or that it's, but it's complex and it's mm-hmm. rich and it's deep. And for everything you learn about a specific area or specific region, there's 1,000 more things you could learn about it. And there's 1,000 more events that took place. And so instead of this, hey, I'm going to stand on the mountain Beatitudes, and even though it's beautiful and it's peaceful and you can imagine it and smell it and see it and picture, you know, that moment in time, It never did for me, and it never did for her, bring us to this place of, oh my gosh, Jesus stood here. Now everything makes sense.
Yeah. Same with me. I mean, that was my first experience there. And that was my experience there as a student. So in some ways, I think this is what what Israel and Palestine does to people if you'll let it, which means you have to relax your agenda. I mean, and allow the complexity. I mean, even if you think about, I mean, this sounds kind of like a bizarre analogy, but if life moves from simple to complex, I mean, that's just the nature of nature. You know, that's the story of from simple organisms to complex organisms. So if that's just the way it is, why would we expect anything different in terms of faith or your religious disposition than simple to complex? It doesn't mean you have moments or tastes that there's clarity, but it is like walking into a field of questions. Just look at the life of Jesus. Almost every time he's asked something, he responds to the question. And it's like no church would hire him to be the pastor because he doesn't wrap everything up. He just sometimes even says, well, what do you think? Now, what kind of answer is that except the right kind of answer? You know, that takes someone's spiritual life seriously, but also puts a certain amount of burden of responsibility that I'm not going to tell you what to do. And you have to struggle a bit and, you know, the blinders have to come off and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I'm glad to hear that in a way.
I think she definitely listens to this, and I think she'll be interested in your response because it was frustrating a little bit too, because you come in with an agenda. I came in with an agenda. And there's parts of this, and I want to be clear, and a lot of it is a little shout out unpurposely to your study Bible that you wrote. I have it now. It's sitting over here. There is a lot more that makes sense biblically to me now, or at least I can picture it, understand it. Okay. Try to make connections where things maybe felt misplaced before, but there is a lot more questions than answers when I came home from this. And so if that was your experience 18 or whatever years ago, why in the world would you continue to go back and now lead trips to a place that added complexity to your life?
Because complexity is interesting, and that's why, and that's where the depth is. And it's not all chaos and confusion. It's a conversation with chaos and order. It's a yin and yang kind of thing. And I don't know, it's what I get from the life of Jesus, and from maybe it could be even more specific from the life of the disciples of Jesus, is that they're also not handed a prepackaged answer book for things. Basically, Jesus says, I'm going to leave. Go figure it out. He even says to Peter, there's that famous scene at Caesarea Philippi where, you know, he says, I'm going to give you the keys to the kingdom. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound on earth. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed on earth. Well, what else is that than an invitation to sink into one's own authority? I mean, you could even say authority inspired by God, whatever that means, but it's like, I cannot tell you everything. So you're going to have to figure it out. And if you read the rest of the New Testament, there's a huge argument between Peter and Paul. And which is right? Who's right here? I don't know. I have no idea. But that's just the nature of life with, I don't know, with a God that remains elusive and mysterious. And that is a difference between my trips and other people's trips, which is like, we're going to come and clear everything up and affirm everything you already know. Well, why would you pay, you know, several thousand dollars to just have everything you've ever known affirmed? You know, why not pay a few thousand dollars and have a few things changed or challenged so that you can grow? It's like, it's why we send kids to school, you know, because we want them to learn something, you know, we want them to be challenged. So, and maybe over time, I have a certain amount of trust that the real, now, I'm going to sound like a, you know, I'm not trying to sound too mystical, but I trust that whatever we mean by God, the unknown, the mystery, you know, the unnameable is the agent of change that is at work. It's not really up to me anyway. And in some ways I trust that that's what's happening. Not that I'm doing something so unique or powerful. I'm basically saying, let's look at this text and talk about it here, or let's look at this complex issue and see what's coming up for people. And here's what's coming up for me. And in some ways, your trip, by the way, is different. I wasn't always like this, to tell you the truth. You know, I went to school for this thing. I you know, p- paid a lot of money for a graduate degree. I could have told, I probably shared 0.01% of what I actually know about any given site, you know, because I, that just stopped mattering to me. And I want to, I'm like a participant on them as much as you are. I remember one time we were in the desert, in the Judean wilderness, and we were looking at the temptation story of Jesus. So Jesus goes to the wilderness, he's tempted by the tempter, by Satan, and it has these sort of three temptations. And I felt like it was almost as if I was like reading it for the first time. Like that was my experience. I was like, what is happening here? Like it was affecting me and changing me. I didn't have like a pre-programmed lesson ready to go. And that was unique. That's different. And that's what I hope will happen for other people. So make sense?
It does make sense. And I want to talk a little bit because I think for people that hear this who are used to or more comfortable within a packaged offering or a packaged message that says it would be great to go and see this, learn about this, and go home and just talk about now what I saw and what I know. Maybe if you don't mind more personally, where do you see God interacting in that mystery? So when there is mystery to it and there is some unknown and there isn't so much, yes, this is what happened and this is what didn't happen. When we leave hoping that the person, the individual can take something with them and learn from it over time, where do you see God at in that?
Well, I don't know. It's like what you said about Jess. She's like, well, I wish we could do that podcast over again because whatever is happening is still happening. That's the evidence, you know? And I don't know. That's what I've, it requires a certain amount of faith that I'm not the agent at work. I don't know how else to say it. I don't know. There's a kind of relaxation that can happen. It's funny because the impulse to make everything tidy, I can still feel from time to time. Like, ooh, people aren't going to like if I pull the rug out right here. But, you know, but the other side of me says, if I can pull the rug out of someone's faith by sharing one archaeological detail, it's not much of a faith, you know? So it's like, you know, I don't need to be on such a high horse. I just, all right, this is what happens. The complexity of history and how religion developed and even the complexity of what the Bible actually is. I don't need to inundate people with a bunch of data, but I can allow for the complexity to come in and it shakes people up. And that's what I sense Jesus is up to. If you even read the Gospels in a straightforward way, you would never think Jesus is there just encouraging people and building them up. Most of the time, he's making enemies. You don't crucify someone who's like your pal that everybody likes, you know? So obviously, he's up to shaking people's foundations, especially religious people. He's a lot more kind to what everyone was calling sinners, you know? He says nice things to them, but everybody else, he's just comes like a hammer. So I'm not trying to come like a hammer so much, but I do trust that what's disruptive might serve people in ways that I don't foresee. And that's been my experience over the years. Like when people write to me, sometimes right after or years later, they'll often say things like, this was a turning point for me. And it launched me on a certain kind of journey. And you know what I feel when they say that is that, yeah, me too. That's what happened to me. Good. And I have to let go of what kind of result that might be, you know, because they, you know, maybe some people, they end up walking away from a certain expression of their early faith. Okay, fine. Other people, they might, I don't know, find something else. So like the destination isn't up to me just, but I do see a trip like this as a little bit of a disruptor. It's hard for me to, you know, I don't exactly put that on my website because, you know, who would sign up for that? But the other side of me says, I don't know if I believe you when you say people want the prepackaged thing. Really? They do? They go to church and they just want the prepackaged thing every week. Part of me says, yeah, probably not. I mean, there's a craving that people have for depth and meaning. And if that's true, then that's going to be more complex and less of the party line, you know? I mean, just look at the state of politics. Isn't everybody just sick of the party line? I don't care if you're on the right or left, just come stop repeating this ridiculously simple narrative. That's not life. And we could say the same thing of the faith tradition, I think. So that's just my two cents.
Well, I mean, I would hope that I could agree with you and say you're right. I mean, I think comfort has a lot also to come into play. And I think people desire comfort. And I think something prepackaged told you exactly how it is and what you need to do and say to be a part of this tradition or this faith community brings comfort. Because then I'm on the inside and there and everybody else is on the outside. And if you're on the outside, I know my role to you is to tell you to get on the inside. And I think at some level that's attractive because I know where I stand.
Yeah.
And I know where everybody else stands. Now, I think for me, to speak personally, is the disruption has been really good, healthy. It's made me a better human, made me more curious, made me a better husband, made me a better son, a better friend is the disruption has always done that consistently in my life. And that's not to say I've wanted it to happen. Not a desired disruption, but when it's happened, it's made me at least more humble, which is something I continually battle.
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought of a T.S. Eliot line. He's like, humility is endless. You know? Yeah, that's right. Humility is endless. And when you can feel that, you also feel a certain amount of curiosity. Like it can be humiliating to not know, but also your curiosity is provoked. And I mean, the rigid systems out there don't allow for curiosity. And so people get sick of them. I totally agree that a lot of people want comfort. That's the comfort of a political party, the comfort of my church always says the right thing, you know, but I just see that as, I don't mean this in any arrogant way. I hope not. I'm just trying to say humility is endless. That's a stage, you know, that's maybe a necessary stage in our development. Yeah. People feel dislodged and they need a tribe. They need a group. And that group holds them for a while. And that's even Jesus, you know, he's like, hey, come be a part of my little club. We've got 12, you know, plus 7 women. And we're traveling around. I mean, that must've felt great until he was like, yeah, by the way, the nature of my messianic task is to go to Jerusalem and die. And they're like, no, that's not how it's going to go. That's not what we see. That's not what I signed up for. You know, that's not the church I want to be a part of, you know, but that's what he does. He takes them right to the edge and then, you know, with a very gentle and gracious and terrifying shove, pushes them over and says, you go find out. And I like I said, back to the trust in the mystery, I think that's the agent that's at work. And you could almost say it's a universal pattern, this knowing and then unknowing and then knowing again, but from the other side, and then maybe another form of unknowing. And it's like Moses saying to God, you know, who are you? And he's like, I am, you know, in Hebrew, it's even more mysterious. I am that I am. It's like God says, I am being itself. Well, what are you supposed to do with that? And then the being itself says, you can't know me. You can't look at me. You can't make a graven image of me. You don't even know my name. Well, who would sign up for that? But that's like second half, you know, that's at first. You know, Moses was like, all right, I've got this God that I'm following. I'm going to hike up the mountain. You know, he's going to tell me what to do. And there's a kind of knowing there. And then he gets to the edge of unknowing. And I think that's that liminal kind of threshold space. That's where change happens, you know, between what you think you know and the unknown. And dancing close to that is a pretty important part of spiritual growth. And in my experience, and also I think, according to the great, you know, sages and teachers, you know, that kind of thing.
Hey everybody, it's Ben here. I just wanted to tell you about Generous. Generous Coffee Company is a company my buddies and I started a few years ago with one simple purpose, to provide the highest quality coffee. So when you hear people talking about, oh my gosh, That's the best coffee I've ever had. Well, Generous would fall into that category, specialty grade coffee. And then 100% of the profits are donated to nonprofits. We also have apparel and coffee mugs, but our coffee is really what drives us. So today, go visit us on Instagram at generous_coffee, or please, please go visit our website, generouscoffee.com. You can buy some coffee for yourself, for your business, for your school, for your church, for your family. It's a great gift, and we love to provide it to you. So please go out there today, buy some coffee. We look forward to having you as our guest and our client. It would be such a cool partnership, and I would love to hear what you think. So please review us online. Again, that's generouscoffee.com. 100% of the profits are donated to nonprofits. And I want to remind everybody listening, a lot of these ideas, at least for me, and Kent can attest, I ask a lot of questions because I know very little. And I ask a lot of questions to try to, I don't even know why I ask the questions, to try to make sense of something or to get something off my chest that I'm frustrated with. But a lot of stuff we're talking about came from this trip, these two weeks or so that we spent in Israel, and the pages of notes and the readings and the understanding and just seeing and the disruption in my own life and in Jessica's life and my family's life and the people in Tripp's life to just go start asking questions. And I don't want it to sound like it was chaos, because it's beautiful. And it was at every level enjoyable to discuss, to converse amongst each other on what did you think of this? What did you see in this? What did you feel by this? That is the consistent theme of the 2 weeks there, and even now moving on into the next part of life. It's why Hope Still Wins started, Kent. It's why, because I said I'm tired of people always being perfect when I watch them on TV, and I want to bring them on this thing to try to show people that we don't all have it all together, and like everybody's got some stuff. Which is the question I want to follow up with for you is, you are very knowledgeable. When it comes, you went to school there, you studied there, like you said, you got a degree in this stuff. You could have brought everybody over there and left everybody in a chaos of knowledge and twirling in circles and going, I don't get anything anymore. Like, I don't understand any of this. But you chose to leave it open-ended. And maybe we're just pounding in this message, but there's something I want to get out of it, because I think it's really important. Is why did you choose not to leave everybody with their head swirling in circles and in chaos and like gnashing of teeth and tears from leaving that trip? Instead, you just left it open-ended so that people left with a mystery and with questions being asked.
I don't know. I mean, part of me is, I don't know. I would say it's kind of intuition I have. Here are questions I tried to ask as people were leaving. And they're almost like the most simple ones I can think of. What was the nature of your actual experience here? It's funny that when it comes to spirituality and faith, many people never even ask that question. What is the nature of my own experience? Most of the time it's like, what do I believe? You know, or what am I supposed to believe? Or sometimes it's, what should I do? Or what's God's will for me to do next? You know, and the mind is like in knots about this thing, instead of what actually happened to me. And if I can get even closer to the next one, which is, what is happening to me right now? I mean, I'm asking those questions because those are the questions that I'm wrestling with. Like, what was the nature of my own experience with you and others here? Well, it was actually quite different for me than other trips. What is actually happening in me? Every year, by the way, I think, this maybe behind the curtain, I think this is going to be my last trip. This is it. And there was a time when I was doing a lot more than I do now. So some of it is just, you get tired of it. It's, you know, I got a family, I got kids, you know, traveling like that is challenging. It creates a lot of challenges. And then, but if I can get close to what is the nature of my own experience, and I can feel that a kind of mystery is at work in my own life, and I start to hear that from other people, it's like it's starting to get reflected back. Then I'm like, okay, I'm in the right kind of place. Like Jesus has this line. He says, the spirit blows wherever it pleases. You can't tell where it comes from and where it's going. Like I have when I can feel that happening in my own life, I think I've done as good enough of a job to get out of the way of the mysterious wind of the divine. And that's what I'm more interested in. And that's kind of new. Like I said before, I kind of treat it like a graduate seminar. Like, what if I could cram my entire, you know, I have a master's degree and plus part of another one from Israel, because I went to two different colleges there. And I'm just going to do all this in 10 days. Well, what people come away with was, wow, that was a lot, you know? and I hadn't learned yet that that's not really all that important. And it's important to leave it open-ended, but enough sort of seeds that I would like people to trust that whatever they think of the divine, that it's at work here. And even I've had some people who are right on the edge and they don't really believe in God anymore, you know, or they don't believe in like a man upstairs that's like doing things and, you know, is kind of angry about certain people and likes other people and they're suspicious. And that's becoming most of the modern world, by the way, as you know. But even with that kind of skepticism, because I have that kind of skepticism too. And in some ways I went to Israel with that kind of skepticism. I think it still applies. Like, what is the nature of my own experience? Are these really my questions? You know, am I parroting something that I read or what actually is happening in my heart? You know, that's what's the nature of my feeling here? My imagination, what questions are mine to carry now? I would love if people came away from a trip like this and said, what's mine to carry? You know, I ended the trip. Maybe you remember, maybe you don't, with a quote from St. Francis. He said to his followers, I have done what is mine to do. Now you must do what is yours to do. That's what I want people to walk away with. And yeah, so you've got your things to deal with. You know, what's yours to carry in the world? Make sense?
It does. Now, for those that are listening that are saying, you know, the foundation of this conversation is built on our trip to Israel that Kent led along with my buddy Michael and my pastor Michael and then two others, our bus driver and then a guide from Israel. But Kent, what does that look like for the listener who isn't able to get all the way over to Israel? What is those questions and that practice look like in our everyday lives that people will be experiencing here in 10 minutes when they stop listening to this podcast?
Or maybe while they're listening to this podcast. I mean, I don't know. In some ways, yeah, it is a privilege to go over there. And I feel that every time I go, you know, I'm like, God, how did I ever end up doing this in the first place? And not everybody can do it. I realize that. But what would be the difference between going on a intensive experience like this or just listening to this podcast? Doesn't the same question apply? What is the nature of my own experience? What questions really, if I'm really honest, what are the ones that I'm carrying? Not the ones that I've been told to carry. That requires a kind of faith, a kind of trust that this is where I think Jesus is the most radical. And it's funny because we live in the 21st century where people are told, hey, you can be anything you want, you know, even though that's not really true. You know, there's no way I'm going to become the president. That's just period. You know, it's not going to happen. People are not going to vote for me. So I can't do everything, but there's a little bit more of an individualistic vibe, you know, that's new, totally brand new on the scene. That was, in fact, it was completely absent in 2000 years ago. It was much more my tribe, my group, my ethnicity, my religion, much more identifying markers. But Jesus is one of the first to really push against that and say, you know, I'll paraphrase and use my own way of putting it. You can have an individual relationship with God. That's completely radical. He's saying this is a direct quote from him. The Spirit will guide you into truth. Well, how? Well, I guess through the nature of my own humble, to use your word, questions and curiosities and wonderings. And curiosity is a great thread to follow, you know, especially humble curiosity. I don't know is a is a very, it's a spiritual stance that I think we need now in the 21st century. So it's like, yeah, that's quite radical. And that means if you're in church, you should be asking things like, wait a minute, what's mine to carry here? I don't care what whatever Pastor Tim keeps going on and on about. He clearly has an agenda here, a hang up. I'm not even mocking him. I'm just saying he's got his thing that he's carrying. So what is getting stirred up for me? Do I want to be here? Do I not want to be here? What questions are, won't leave me alone? You know, in those moments where it's like the kind of things that wake you up at 3 a.m., you know, that kind of thing. And I encourage people, I don't know, to trust that there's a path. Okay, one more thing here. So Peter, right after the resurrection, and you know, it's almost Easter here. So right after the resurrection, unbelievably, the disciples are back in Galilee fishing, which I think is like hilarious, you know? So like, well, what should we do next? I guess we can fish. So they like go back to fishing. And then Jesus is there. This is in the Gospel of John. And he's cooking fish, which is like crazy, you know? And so the disciples come over and Peter's there. And Jesus says to Peter something like this: when you were young, you went and did whatever you wanted. You know, you went here, you went there, you created a life, you know, but when you're old, you'll be led by a way that you don't know anything about. Now, most people read that and they think, well, he's referring to how Peter is going to die one day, you know, and that's true. That's true. But I think it's more subtle and more powerful. And the spiritual life is like that. When you're young and you're marching around doing this and that and saying, I believe this and I'm all about this. And at a certain point, you have to start asking, I wonder what it would be like to surrender to the wind here, to the spirit, to the unknown. And I might have to be led by a way I don't know anything about. And if that's the case, then you don't really know the way you're being led. And that's surrender, you know, and that's that right at the heart of the Christian tradition, you know. Any Orthodox Christian will say it's about surrender. So, anyway, that's the kind of thing that I think is eternally present. So yeah, maybe I'll pause there.
Yeah. And I want to compliment you, even though it's not at all what you're looking for and probably not all at all what you would desire, and to say it was an incredible trip from many different aspects. Learned a ton, a ton of knowledge, a ton of really cool archaeological like information. And then also, had a lot of questions that came from it. But also made a lot of parallels within the Bible that I was never making before. A lot of things that I could see and experience and see how close different cities were to each other, and to see how close the Judean desert was to the Sea of Galilee, and see how far that must have been to travel and to Jerusalem. Like, just make sense of it geographically and to see things with my own eyes again, or for the first time. And then also to leave with so many questions and to be wrestling with it and to be thinking about it. It was well worth it. And so I hope you lead a trip again.
Thanks.
and if you do, I would like to give everybody the opportunity to say, where could they find out if you are or not, if they're listening to this?
Yeah, I appreciate it. So I will answer that, but let me mirror something back to you. Okay. So I didn't know you before this trip. I didn't know you had a podcast. I didn't know you were up to interesting things in the world, or, you know, I didn't know anything. And I like that. When people come on my trips, I don't really want to know that much about them. Like, every single person on the trip is a profound mystery to themselves, much less to me. So, but one of the things I experienced about from you early on was actually your curiosity, and your curiosity drove the trip in a certain direction. I mean, I don't, maybe you couldn't see that, but I could. Ben's questions, actually, you probably don't know this at all, even changed the itinerary. Because I'd think, Ben seems to be interested in X, so maybe I'll do this next, which is because I'm prone to do this thing and not really announce it. I'll just decide to do something else. I'll just go somewhere else. So anyway, and I want to say that yeah, follow that thread. That's the thread you can't let go of, you know, the curiosity of your own soul. It's like the soul has a certain shape and it takes us a while to discover that. And one of the things you can rely on in discovering the shape of your own soul is to begin to follow those little promptings and curiosities and questions, and to tell yourself something like, no question is off limits. I'm just going to ask it. I'm just going to see what happens if I engage in this way. So yeah, anyway, thanks for saying that about my trips. You know, kentdobson.com is my website, and I am about to do another trip. I'm going to do a trip in 2023, in March, it looks like, and I'm about to put that on my site. So yeah, that'll be available to people. There's a group from Minneapolis that I think, you know, I don't know how many people, 10 or 15 that might make up a small portion of that, but I'm always open to people from all over joining, and that makes it more interesting when, you know, people from a variety of perspectives join. So yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Variety of perspectives and ages.
Yeah.
It makes it really fun. Because like I said, the conversing on the bus is so interesting to hear what people picked up on, what disrupted people, what really excited people. Like, that was so cool to see. And maybe somebody else was like, I didn't think it was that tight. Like, I don't even know what you're looking at. Like, it's really enjoyable.
Cool.
And so I want to close here in the last couple minutes. I didn't say this to you before, but there's a couple on the trip. I won't say where they're from and I won't even say who they are, but there were a couple on the trip that came because they had been listening to your podcast and they had read your book, Bitten by a Camel. And they said, I just wanted to come. And they've always wanted to come to Israel, but they said, I wanted to come with Kent. And so I'd like to talk about two things there. Mostly your book. Why do you think from your book that they said, hey, this, I trust Kent enough, or I want to be around Kent a little bit more to learn from him on this trip?
Oh, I don't know. We might need another hour. I mean, what is Bitten by a Camel is a book I wrote a couple years ago, and it's a book about what happened to me in Israel. I mean, this was actually happened to me. I was bitten by a camel climbing Mount Sinai, trying to very genuinely and seriously ask God what I should do with my life. Like, I climbed to the top of Mount Sinai. I was like, I'm open. Just tell me something. I mean, you have to read the book to see, you know, the specifics of that, but on the way down, like almost immediately from the top, I was bitten by a camel. And so this is like, and I didn't tell anybody for several years. I didn't like turn that into some metaphor, you know, as pastors are prone to do. It actually embarrassed me sort of deeply. Like, what, you know, what am I doing? And I didn't, maybe what I begin to see many years later was that this was the beginning of some real unknowing that needed to happen in my life. And that's kind of scary territory to roam into. And I used to be a megachurch pastor. And so the book sort of is also about leaving that. And I'm not against megachurches at all. But partway through my, well, I was at this church, Mars Hill in Grand Rapids, for like 17 years. I did the music there at first. And then later on, I took the job as the main dude, I guess. But, and so I did that for about 4 years. And so it's about the departure from that too. I couldn't hold the center. It's not where, to use really old fashioned language, it's not where I was called. I felt pulled or called to the edges of faith. I don't know if I would, I mean, I'm working on another book as we speak, so I might put things differently then, but the book is about that kind of departure from a certain kind of certainty around evangelical Christianity to that unraveling. And that's not something I wanted to happen. It's not like, man, I really want everything to unravel for me. It's just what happened, but I kept going. And so the book is a little bit of a vulnerable look behind the curtain of what were the things that I was wrestling with and what pulled me to the edge and what's left in the wake of a kind of faith that didn't work for me, or I couldn't be in some ways the pastor of a big church is like kind of the central cheerleader, you know, like, and that's an important role. I couldn't do it. You know, I was like, no, I feel like something is pushing against me. you know? And so at a certain point, I was like, this doesn't work anymore. I can't put all my problems on everybody else. I got to face this if I'm really going to go any further. So maybe they trusted that I hadn't abandoned, or maybe I abandoned God, but God wouldn't abandon me. That's kind of what the book is about, you know, like I'm out of here, but I when continued to be haunted by the mystery of the divine. So maybe they trusted that. And I do think, you know, it's not like millions of bitten by camels are out there, but it is a, something is happening in mass in our culture. People are very suspicious of religion, of institutional religion. And so part of the book is just exposing that, like, this is what it was like for me. And so because it's kind of personal, maybe they just trusted something about that. And we're like, all right, well, let's, if we're going to go to Israel, might as well go with Kent, see what he has to say. So something like that.
Well, to not go on a tangent, and I know your time is precious. You know, I didn't tell you this on the trip, but you just saying that alone has reminded me to, you know, there is a message at Mars Hill that changed my life forever. Mm-hmm. I was probably, I don't even know how old I was. I was younger. And there was a message that was shared that said, anytime your leader or your pastor, this I'm summarizing, obviously a very long message, is speaking about, speaking down to, or speaking to any certain topic over and over and over again, that's typically a sign that your leader has something to deal with internally that you should stay attuned to. And what that did for me was ask myself the question. I still will never forget this. It's one of the few moments that I can remember this, a message or a teaching changed everything for me. It embarrassed me. In that moment, because I said, what is it that I'm focusing on and telling everybody about over and over and over again? Because I have something that I need to deal with internally, that I have something that I need to confront internally. And so from that moment forward, I said, I will never again place all of my problems on everybody else around me without me focusing somewhat on myself and letting that mystery unfold inside of me before I just go out and start spewing whatever it is that's on my mind all the time.
It's amazing. It's that is like, that's profound, really. And I'm glad you heard that at Mars Hill, because it's 100% true. It's psychological projection 101. It's like we project onto whoever, sometimes people, groups, institutions, ideas, ideologies, something that we have to look at. And yeah, you're 100% right. And that's a little of what was happening to me. I could feel that I am going to be putting on everybody else every week something that I got to get more serious about. And it was scary. I mean, I have to be honest, I had no backup plan. I when I left Mars Hill, it happened so quickly. I stood at the kitchen window. I mean, I had a therapist that I was talking to kind of on and off about it for about a year. But when I decided, that was it. And I thought in my strategic mind, I'm going to tell the elders and they're going to say, hey, great, no problem. And over the course of the year, I'll transition, you know, this kind of thing. And they're like, okay, you got to be out of here in like a month, you know, it was like, or like 2 months, you're gone. You know, I was like, oh, and then all of a sudden I was like, I don't have a backup plan. This is like, and so I really felt like I was venturing into the unknown, which is exactly what I said I wanted to do. But my ego was like, I'll manage this somehow. Mm. But it turned up the heat all the way. And anyway, yeah. So yeah, thanks for bringing that up and for sharing a bit about how to, you know, Mars Hill help shape some of your own questions.
Yeah, it did. It did. And it's wild that so many years later, I can still remember that exact moment of, I'll say it's embarrassment. I don't know how to properly describe it, or just,
yeah, conviction. That's how it feels to me.
Yeah.
Embarrassment. Yeah. It's like shame. I mean, shame gets a really bad rap and, you know, like shame is the problem, but also the flush of embarrassment is totally primal. It's in the Genesis story, you know, it's like, and it can be a kind of compass, not always. It can be debilitating and crippling sometimes, but it's like, oh yeah, it's time for me to wake up little bit.
Yeah.
Take a look in the mirror. So, yeah.
Well, I mentioned it early on, and as we close up here, I do want to mention it again. There is a study Bible, that you put together that is absolutely incredible. And I will say that you don't have to say it for yourself. You'll probably say, oh, it's whatever, but it's really great. And it's been very helpful for me since we got back from the trip. And I learned that you had done that. I'll joke that there's not many left out there. It's really hard find.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that until this trip. I didn't. I was like, oh, it must still be available, but it's not. Actually, people can always get the digital version. I'm quite proud of it, to be honest, yeah. because I worked on it for almost 4 years and I'm the editor. And so I wrote all of the notes that are in it and the articles and things like that. But also I had 7 editors that were under me and it was a project. And I think it's personally one of the better study Bibles that Zondervan has put out and HarperCollins, whatever the parent company has put out. So yeah, I'm all for, yeah, go get it. But you have to get the digital version, which is cheaper anyway. I called them after the trip. I was like, hey, you know, this is not in print anymore. It's like getting expensive on Amazon. And so I started negotiating with them, you know,
yeah,
trying to get them to put it back out again. We'll see if they bite on it. They're like, well, you can buy 1,000 from us and we'll reprint 1,000, but you have to buy them. I was like, I don't have the money for 1,000 study Bibles. Who are you talking to here? You know, well, come on.
The best is my mom went out without telling me because Jess got me one for my birthday. Because mm-hmm. we celebrated my birthday on the trip and my mom went out looking for it and she texted me. She goes, hey, I know Jess bought you this study Bible. Is this the one? And she sent me a screenshot. I don't know if Michael shared this with you. I sent it to him.
He didn't. No.
And it's on Amazon. And I must have been a joke. I don't know. Maybe you signed it, but this is not a joke. I still have the picture on my phone. Your study Bible was for sale on Amazon for $50,000. Yeah.
This is ridiculous. How can that be a thing?
I don't know.
I mean, is that like a Russian bot controlling Amazon or something?
Demand skyrocketed after the trip. 20 people got online and like, I want to buy it. And then Amazon said, all right, let's spike the price.
If only I was the person behind that, you know, pocketing $49,000 or whatever.
It's great. But yeah. No, if somebody can't get their hands on it, it is really good and it is very helpful. And it's, I don't know, for lack of a better word here, it makes it really fun to read the Bible for me in the mornings and in the afternoons. It brings more clarity and it also brings more questions and it brings more explanation to a lot of the stuff that I had a lot of questions on. And so it is worth going out and looking at.
Cool. Hey,
we end every podcast in the same way with every guest. And I always like to open it up to say, this is an open-ended question. There is not an agenda here to it. You answer it however you would like. We've had multiple different answers depending on where somebody's at in life or what experiences they've had. But here's the question. And I think it's a good question. Mm-hmm. I think it's a simple question, but I think it's a good question. Do you believe hope still wins? If so, why? And if not, why not?
Well, first of all, I don't know about winning. Actually, I resonate with the impulse. Part of me wants to say yes. Hope still wins. But winning, you know, is in that kind of realm of of winners and losers. And I'm not actually against that. I think that has a place in the great conversation of what it means to be human, but I don't know if it's a competition. And so that's more of a question mark I might have. What do we mean by winning? It's the same with like love wins. Well, what's the competition, you know? But I might say that the way I tend to think about hope is not optimism. I don't tend to put it that way. I tend to think about hope as a kind of disposition to move toward beauty and truth and goodness, even if it's not going to work out. That's what I think about hope. And yes, that wins. Like, okay, I would like to be oriented toward toward what is good and true and beautiful, even if I don't know what that is, that's going to be my orientation. And yes, that's better than the alternative. That beats the alternative. What's the alternative? Nihilism, meaninglessness, disorder. A certain amount of disorder is necessary, but that kind of resignation. And I think, yeah, I would rather be oriented toward what is true and what is good and what is beautiful. And that's a hopeful stance. And I would like to be oriented that way, even if I think I'll lose, you know. And we have major, major problems going on in American culture, in the world, in the globe, in economics and whatever, you know, just go down the list. And there is more, it sounds like, especially if you're, you know, on Twitter and on social media, it sounds like none of these things are ever going to be resolved. And I don't want to resign myself to that posture. And so, yeah, I think about hope as a posture, and that's the right kind of thing to encourage in the world. And I'm glad you have a podcast called Hope Still Wins, because that's a question that people ought to be carrying around their disposition. So maybe that's my little riff on it.
Ken Dobson, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
You're a tremendous leader and a great guest. Thanks for joining Hope Still Wins.
Hey, appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Hope Still Wins. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify and join the community over on Instagram at Hope Still Wins. Well, that's it for today. Reminder to check out Kent's work. We'll link everything in the show notes. And if you're interested in learning more about the trips he leads, please reach out, kentdobson.com. I'd really be excited to hear if some of you went on a trip with Kent and also your experiences after going that trip. So if you go, please share them with me. Thank you again for listening to this episode of Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. Let's talk next week.